This episode, we hear from Josh Bird. Josh's rapid growth from a pole barn in 2018 to two shops today, doing over $4 million combined. Josh shares his journey, working for a dealership making over six figures just to leave it all behind, with the encouragement of his wife to go solo and risk it all. In his words, there was no turning back, and they just had to figure it out. He shares the ups and downs of being an owner, including how coaching helped him rapidly grow into navigating the feeling of no longer being needed.
So my wife and I, we go on a weekend. She's like, what's up? I basically everything out. We end the conversation. We get back in the car to come home on Sunday, and we pull back in the driveway, and she goes, so when's your last day? December 26th, I get a cease and desist from the county out of our pole barn.
Whoops.
Yes. Wow. And it's like, okay, we'll figure this out.
What would you tell somebody who's in a job at the dealer doing what you did? What would you tell them?
Don't. No. I'm just kidding.
That's insane.
It is.
That is insane when you think back about it. Like, what you have pulled off in such a short amount of time is absolutely nuts.
And as you develop in the coaching side of it and you start to get the peers that are within the coaching groups, those peers can be very powerful and very impactful on how you grow your shops. It's amazing some of the impact that we've had on employees. I mean, we've got one young man there right now that I honestly don't know where he'd be right now or if he'd still be with us if he didn't work for us. Our shop has become his family. Because they were doing fine without me and I wasn't needed. And
this is a big topic right here.
There was no turning back, no going back. We were just going to make it work.
Wow. So if that doesn't inspire somebody out there, I don't know what will.
I often say pain necessitates change. Are you going to wait until it's painful enough for you to change? Do you know that your shop has another gear, but you just can't find it? ShopFix Academy has the largest community of like-minded business professionals to help you find that next gear. You get coaching, community, and personal development. So here's my challenge to you. Call ShopFix. Try them out. Don't take my word for it. Find out for yourself. I know firsthand what they can do. I've seen the businesses turn around. I've talked to the owners whose lives have changed, whose families are doing better today than they were before. Call 615-645-3683. Take this challenge as an opportunity to find out for yourself. Imagine where you could be after 12, 24, 36 months from now. You can be in a completely better place, or you can wait, let another year go by. Pain necessitates change. Call 615-645-3683 and let them know we sent you. Call ShopFix. I'm amazed how many shops out there are not taking advantage of digital marketing. Using a digital marketing partner is your key to effortlessly increasing car count. And notice I said partner, not vendor. Finding an experienced partner who works with you makes all the difference. A partner gets to know you and what your business needs, not just apply a template and send you a bill and call it a day. Leads Near Me is a partner you need. And yes, they have experience managing over $16 million in ad revenue, specifically in auto repair. But what's even more impressive is how they work with you. If you go to their website, leadsnearme.com, they host a ton of videos and podcast content for you to get to know them personally. Or call them at 888-953-2379 and find out how they can partner with you. Again, that's 888-953-2379. Leads Near Me, effortlessly increasing car count. You're listening to the Success Leaves Clues podcast, a podcast for the auto repair industry, where we uncover the journey of real shop owners. We hear their story of what it took to get their breakthrough, because we are here to inspire you to have your own breakthrough, to be the success you've been looking for, and to change your industry, your family, and your life forever. Thank you for joining us, and now on to the episode.
So Josh, welcome to the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, glad to have you. So we've just been talking a little bit, and you guys having some similarities with starting out in a barn.
Yes.
That's impressive. You want to talk a little bit about how you got your barn? Is that the thing? Do a lot of people start in barns?
Only cool owners do.
Yeah.
Right next to their house.
Well, I didn't own that then. It was a single wide trailer and it was available for $100 a month. So mine was gravel, no concrete. We should have a contest. Whose was worse? So gravel. Actually, it was dirt. I put gravel in it. No concrete. Had no electricity. I got the electricity in probably 2-3 weeks later. But I could never do like I couldn't do a compressor and, a heat gun or something at the same time. That trip, you know, so I had to limit what I did. I did some outdoor metal halide lamps in the ceiling. So how bad was yours?
Ours, we had 10-foot ceilings, one lift.
That's worse right there.
We had to pick what power tool we were going to run. So yeah,
it was. I had no lift though, so take that.
Yeah, that's, I wouldn't want to work on gravel either. Gravel's rough.
Well, I put the sport court together and I got it from a used tennis court. Those that don't know what sport court is, just those 1-foot tiles, they're plastic, they click, click, click together. You can see them in some shops now actually for flooring, but it's meant to go on top of concrete. And I did it just to not have to walk on gravel, and it was wavy and everything. But my little MVP jack from Walmart, when I had bumped that thing up, literally, it was from Walmart. I got the jack and the two jack stands for like $49.99. I pumped up that car and go, psh, and the two little wheels would pop through the plastic. I'd be like, crap. So I learned a 4x8 sheet of plywood. I just kind of kept that under the front end of the car. That kind of was the trick. Put the jack on top of the plywood.
I do remember the nice thing about those tiles. If you ever spilled fluids,
it just disappeared. I mean, it's gravel. I mean, environmental nightmare, but whatever. Yeah. But yeah, Jay knew me back then. 20 years ago, we were, turning wrenches in the backyard. 20 years plus, actually, more like 25. But yeah. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about you. So can you go back to the conversation I walked in and kind of the discussion with your wife and that pulling in the driveway? Kind of tell that part.
Leading up to that, I was with the same dealer group for 16, 17 years.
As a tech.
We'll go back a little further.
So I
started out of high school with the dealer group as just a porter. Went through the GMASEP program, which is a technical training program. Proceeded to be a GM master tech. Somewhere around 2012 or 13, I moved into the management side, running their reconditioning center. 2017, we opened the world's third largest Kia dealership at the time. I was the service manager, is what I opened that as. That was a fairly short-lived area or time for me. The dealer group that I did work for, they poured heavily into their people. They sent me around trying to prepare me, going to different groups that had done startups, things like that. And everywhere that I went, every conversation was, it'll take 18 months to get the service department in the black. There's no way around it. We managed to pull it off in 6 months with a great team that we'd put together. I went into our weekly manager's meeting with, like, I was super proud of this, and I'm not someone that needs a lot of attention or pat on the back. And the whole meeting consisted of everything I had done wrong and how much better it could have been. Wow. So it just kind of ended any fire that I had in me. And I was working 80-100 hours a week to make this thing work.
So it deflated you pretty bad.
It deflated bad. And like, if I'd have probably got a little bit of a pat on the back, I'd probably still be there.
Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. Like, the only reason you're on this couch is because some douchebag,
some bad manager.
Some bad manager just said, is that going to get edited? I don't know. But some bad manager says, Josh, if you just done this, this, and this, and he crushes your dreams, and he just thinks he's being critical, or maybe he's trying to make himself look better or whatever, but he doesn't have a clue that he's about to start a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that little conversation, a little negative seed.
Well, and also not only create a competitor, he lost his A game person. It's amazing what one word of encouragement to your A players, like not underestimating your A players, like thinking, oh, they've got it together. They're the A player. They know what they're doing. You need to feed into them.
And I will say, like, to get it into the black, I paid for an oil change on my personal car that we never did just because that got it into the black.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What? Why were you so driven? Because you're telling me like 80-100 hour days, like you just had to do it.
Yeah. It's just who I am. Like, I was a porter, became a tech, moved into management. I've just always progressed in life.
Wow.
See, so that's crazy. How sold out are you that you're going to pay for your own oil change, $19 to get it across the line? You go up, you get the list and you look at it and you go, guys, we're $12, $12 away. Somebody buy an oil, I'm in. Charge me an oil change.
Wow. And that guy probably had no idea you paid for your oil change.
No, he did not.
And he has no idea that you're worth more than him now, that you're making more than him now, and all the stuff that's happened. Like, he birthed you out of hardship. So why don't you continue to tell us about that hardship? So you hit that low spot. What mm-hmm. happened next?
Like, went through that. Nothing really happened at that time, but working the hours I was working, and I'm a male, so I keep everything inside.
We're bad like that.
Yeah. So my wife and I go on a weekend, just her and I, our daughter doesn't go. And she's like, what's up? So we go on a 3-hour trip going to where we're going. And I basically lay everything out. We end the conversation. We get back in the car to come home on Sunday, and we pull back in the driveway, and she goes, so when's your last day? Something I really hadn't given a whole lot of thought at the time.
That's a good woman right there.
So
pushing you over the edge.
We put together a plan, and I walked away from a pretty decent job to go.
Tell us about that. How decent? Like, because there's a lot of people that might listen to this that are also thinking about doing it. So how decent was the job?
I mean, it was a 6-figure income.
So you're making 100K plus.
Mm-hmm.
And probably have a mortgage.
Yeah, we had a mortgage.
Bills.
Yeah.
That was scary.
You had health insurance.
Had health insurance. You had a 401k. Had retirement.
Wow. So you got all these pluses. Did you have money in the bank?
We didn't really have money in the bank, but we were pretty solvent. We didn't have a whole bunch of extras out there. We had a truck payment and I think a razor payment at the time, but that was it.
They always got a razor payment.
Always a razor payment.
If y'all don't know what a razor is, it's a little boy's toy.
Yes. Except it's
a 55-year-old man buying it. It's a side-by-side. It's an ATV with a cage. What is it? With age comes a cage.
Right.
So you go from dirt bikes and four-wheelers to side-by-side. You've got a Polaris Razor payment.
And a truck.
Pickup truck. And a little bit of money in the bank. 100K job. And
I sold my daily driver that I ran back and forth to work in to buy a lift and a scanner, because those were the two things I needed.
You got to have a lift. Got to have a scanner. Okay.
Tools for my career. But that was pretty much it. Like, we went down and I told my wife, I'm like, hey, you've got a nice car. I can do Uber. It's a BMW. We can get a little nicer premium if I have to. After 6 o'clock, I can go drive Uber overnight. For us, it was this is
survive.
Make this work. That's it. There was.
You're going to make it or make it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was no turning back, no going back. We were just going to make it work.
Wow. So if that doesn't inspire somebody out there, I don't know what will. And entrepreneurs are truly what solve the world's problems. So you were literally becoming an entrepreneur. How old were you then?
34.
That had to be scary.
Mm-hmm. Very. Mm. The funnier, ironic part of the whole thing, like, my dad was a home builder growing up, but he never had crews. He was always just a one-man band and maybe a part-time guy in the summer. And I had always said, I'll never own my own business.
Mm. Because and you saw what he went through.
Because I saw what he went through, because he was that one-man band. And so going into it, I had a little bit different thought process. Like, I didn't want to go into it to fix cars. I wanted to go into it to be a business owner. I knew I was going to have to fix vehicles and be that person for a time frame. How long at the time, I didn't know.
Interesting. You knew you had to go and be an act like an owner and not like a tech.
Because my fear going into it, working out of that pole barn, was if I blow my knee out, my family's done.
Yeah. You know, there's so many owners that they'll tell me, Aaron, you're making it just about the money. I can't just do it about the money, blah, blah, blah. I love what I do, yada, yada, yada. And I go, hold on. You're not supposed to love your career. You're supposed to like it. You love your family. So if you don't make enough money, your family doesn't have dreams. Your family doesn't go on vacations, have experiences. And at the end of the day, we always say this, no one lays in their deathbed and says, oh man, I wish I'd spent more time at work. But holy crap, it's true. It's so true. Like, if the business isn't solvent in providing for your family a quality life, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So walk us through, where'd you find your first location? Tell us what the barn was like and how'd you find it and all that stuff.
So the winter leading up to, so this was June of 2018. So that previous spring, I had a decent job and I had a 30x50 unfinished pole barn. I'm like, I'm going to redo the inside of this for a really nice man cave. So we finished it in April, and maybe that was part of the edge, because now I had a spot, but it was a pretty decent spot that was already on the property, so I didn't have to go searching.
So you kind of lived in the country where you had a little bit of room.
Yes. We lived on a few acres, so we had a little bit, but it was right on the edge of town. So we started in that building in June of 18. Had an employee that he'd apprenticed under me at the Chevy store when I was a technician, and then he went with me to the Kia store, but he called me in March of 19, and he's like, hey, either I'm going to work for you or I'm going to work for this Firestone. And I'm like, well, I'm not ready for an employee, but we'll figure it out. He'd been doing some like evening side stuff working for me. So April of 19, ShopFix used to do 2 Shop Hacker conferences a year.
We did.
So he shows up. He's there the first week. The second week, I'm like, hey, I'm going to this thing in Nashville. I can't afford to pay you. So like, you can go home or you can stay here and figure it out and
try to sell some work.
And it's, you know, it's one guy. So he's, you know, 2 or 3 cars for the whole week is probably all he's going to do. He's like, I'll figure it out. And he's still with us today. So I come down here, figure it out. At the time, I was doing like 15, 20,000 a month by myself. So I come down here and I sat. It's funny because I met up with John Kyer and Sunil and Prasanth from Techmetric, and we all went to lunch.
Oh, yeah.
That first day. A lot of people know John and what he's done, but sitting there, he signed up. I waited another year and a half, but to see how everyone has grown from that. So I didn't sign up at the time. It wasn't right for me. Went back. I didn't tell you this earlier. So December 26th, I get a cease and desist from the county out of our pole barn.
Whoops.
So that was December 26, 2019. We get
Merry Christmas.
Yes. Wow. And it's like, okay, we'll figure this out. So
I love your line. We'll figure this out.
There's not really any.
You don't have an option.
What's the option? So my father-in-law, he's partners in a body shop uptown. So we changed everything on our business to their address, submitted a lease agreement with them to the county. And if I didn't know the customer, I met them there and I brought the car to the shop, and we did that for 6 months.
What? And so you didn't even relocate the shop?
We didn't relocate the shop.
Just the business address.
Just the business address. So the people that I knew well, we would still bring to the house. And what we ended up finding, there was another shop in town that wasn't doing well. And the reason he wasn't doing well is because everyone else was succeeding around him. And that's where it kind of stemmed from. And the county told me that. They're like, he calls every day until we do something about you. Otherwise, we'd leave you alone.
So he found out.
So
were you advertising or do anything out? How were you getting customers?
Word of mouth and Facebook groups is really how we were doing it at the time.
Was he in your Facebook group?
I'm sure he was.
He found a way in. Bob Smith.
Yes.
So, cheapest mechanic in town.
That's right.
So, yeah.
So you get this cease and desist. Were you still doing all the work at the house?
Mm-hmm. We were doing you were all just, at the house.
You would just try to keep them dropping off?
New customers or people we didn't really know or maybe not trust, we would meet them there. We let them know we had a satellite location where we worked on cars because there wasn't enough space at the body shop for everything. So we didn't hide any of it. And
you
we
got just, creative.
They were a mile away from each other and we just shuttle back and forth. So that was into the spring of 2020, and we started looking really hard for locations in our little town. Our town's 8,000 people. It's not a big town. There are no garages, so to speak. We were going to add on to that body shop, and that was part of my father-in-law's retirement plan, was add on to it, and then we would buy the whole thing at one point. Our city had a changeover. Like, they lost everybody within the city, so we had all these handshake agreements. And everyone left in a matter of like 3 months' time, these 3 or 4 key people and new people came in, and it just didn't happen. So there was a building that was north of town. We are in an industrial park in a cul-de-sac on the wrong side of the highways where store one is.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, everything about it is wrong.
I had a location like that once behind a graveyard on a dead end street. It was.
It totally was.
So we stumbled across this one. We were trying to figure out stormwater retention for the building adding on to my father-in-law's. And my dad went out, and the gentleman that owned that building, they did underground utilities. So he went to ask him a question. He goes, just tell Josh to buy my building. I'm closing it down and retiring. And I drove out there and looked at him. I'm like, this building's not big enough.
This is the one in the industrial park.
This is the one in the industrial park. Well, like 3 months go by, and you don't even have any other options or opportunities.
How big was this thing?
The shop is 5,000 square feet. The office is 1,400 square feet. We've got 8 bays in it now.
But back then you were like, that's too small.
from the road, it's one of those that looks tiny. Once you get into it, it's bigger because it's in that cul-de-sac. It's all hidden off to the side.
Gotcha.
So I drive by it one day contemplating life, and he's
life
there.
Choices, maybe.
He's there working by himself. So I go in and I'm like, show me this place. So we walk through it and he's like, look, here's the deal. This is what it is. I want to get out of it as quick as I can. I'm going through some stuff, but I'm retiring. I'm like, okay. So we end up buying it and it's worked out. We really didn't have to do a whole lot to it. We just kind of polished it.
You bought it in 20.
We bought it in 20, December 4th of 20. We polished the concrete, added another layer of insulation, put metal up on the sides, all the lifts in, and we opened January 4th of 2021 in that location.
And how long were you in the backyard?
From June of 18 to through December of 2020. 2.5 years.
2.5 years in the backyard. Do you have your man cave back now?
I do.
All right.
Still 10-foot ceilings?
Still 10-foot ceilings.
Okay.
Yeah, you got me beat on that. My ceilings weren't that bad. So this is pretty cool, right? This is pretty awesome what you've pulled off. Now you're in your own building. How much revenue did you do the year before you moved in?
So in 2020, we did right around 470.
In your backyard?
In the backyard.
That's not bad, bro.
No. It was a lot of work. There was a lot of...
But no bills.
No bills. Overhead was low. So I will say we had everything paid off. And one thing I did in the beginning that I think made a huge difference is my wife and I sat down and she had a job at the time. Now she works for the company. But we figured out I needed to bring home $500 a week to make everything work. Now, wow. There were times that, you know, we'd do an extra draw or something like that. But I only paid myself that $500 a week through like June of 2021.
Wow.
So we sacrificed in the beginning because we could see the future.
Good advice. Good advice. Yeah. I remember living in a single wide and my brother already owned a house and all my friends owned a house. Jade probably owned his second or third by then. And I'm sitting here going, man, what am I doing wrong? And I still remember my brother one time saying to me, Aaron, I don't think you realize it. You've gotten used to it. And that kind of stung a little bit. I was used to poverty. So it's kind of a mind job. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I relate to that totally. So tell us about the other side. So 470, what'd you do the first year in the building?
So the first year in the building, we did 1.1.
Time out. On a dead-end street, cul-de-sac, and an industrial park with no drive-by traffic.
Correct.
Wow. How did you do 1.1?
So we joined ShopFix in August of 2020.
But that doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Zane is who my first coach was.
Oh, yeah.
Him and I had that first conversation. Like, when I got paired up with Zane, I'm like, this guy's like 20-something years old. And like Kim and I had our first conversation. I'm like, okay, this will work. Zane knows what he's talking about. But he kept telling me, he goes, you don't realize where you're going or what your potential is. He's like, I can tell you're just going to do great things if we can get you into a good spot. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
20-year-old.
Yeah. I didn't think that for very long.
Who was making gazillions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Super intelligent person. So we started doing some of the ShopFix stuff and we started mailers January of 2021.
That doesn't work either, though, Josh.
we started them going into that first location, and we've, you know, as we've grown, we've got some times where we've gone cold and done some things, but I've never shut them off for more than a month that wasn't for a reason.
Wow. So 1.1.
Mm-hmm.
That's 21.
That was in 21.
22.
22, we did 2.1.
So 2 years back to back, you basically doubled.
Yes.
So was like your hair on fire and your hair short, but I mean, like, was that just a blur for you those 2 years?
Those 2 years were definitely a blur. That was 21, 22. Coming out of 22 into 23, we really started to work on defining like processes, getting the right people in place, things of that nature, preparing for, because we were starting to look for store two.
So what made you decide to move to a second store? You're doing well. What was it?
We can't,
all the cool kids were doing it.
You want more insanity? You want less hair like this?
A lot of it was just freedom, the kind of do what you want, when you want, how you want.
So a second store is going to help with that. I'm joking.
No, he's being devil's advocate.
So, I gotta hassle him a little bit.
Yeah. But I came home from the conference in August in 21, and I didn't go back to the store for a month.
Really?
I left for the conference, and then I didn't go back for a month, and I went through somewhat of a spat of depression.
Why?
Because they were doing fine without me, and I wasn't needed. And
this is a big topic right here, because so many owners, they got to be the best tech, they got to be the best manager, the best advisor, and they don't know how to be the best cheerleader. They don't know how to let go and be an owner of things. They want to be a doer of things. How did you come out of that other side?
Got a lot of good people within ShopFix that I could lean on, and that's what I did. I mean, it's...
You said, what's it like to be a useless owner?
Yeah. I mean, that was a lot of it. And then as we come, I mean, there were things that happened when I wasn't there, but it let me see a lot of things more clearly. And it led me to help coach the manager that was there. I started coaching her differently than what I had been previously, just trying to get, letting her lead, but then coaching her through her leading other people. Mm. And when you're there every day, I wasn't necessarily seeing that.
It sounds like, just from the conversation, especially the first guy who called you up and said, hey, I'd like to be with you, that shows you as a good leader, somebody willing to say, I need to go somewhere. I found a guy. And as you grow up other people, you stepping out allows them to step up.
Mm-hmm. I would say so.
22, you did over 2 million.
Yes.
What about 23?
23, we added the second location June 1st of 23, and we did just over 3 million, almost 3.1.
And what are you tracking, you think, this year?
This year, we should do somewhere around 4.5. If we can really get our stuff together, we'll do 5.
Awesome. You know, what's so interesting in just the story for me is the speed at which you're on this couch. You're sitting in my office. You're now giving others advice. You're now talking to people that were you 5-6 years ago, talking them through these weird challenges and these mindsets. And learning to be an owner of things and not a doer of things. I just can't imagine what that was like, having that compacted in such a short amount of time. I can only imagine the stress that came with that. And as soon as you got used to something, it was already changing to the next thing. I'd love just to hear your conversations with your wife, your kids, your employees, all the people around you as you adjusted, because this was a fast ramp up. You were getting concepts rapidly. So you're obviously very intelligent. But you weren't just doing that. You had to be putting this stuff to use, putting it in play.
Mm-hmm. We put a lot of the systems and processes in play very quickly. I felt bad for the team. I honestly felt bad for the team for a good year and a half.
Because there's so much change.
Because there was so much change. Mm-hmm. And it was in 22, when I finally came back, I told the manager, I'm like, we're done doing big changes. We'd gotten to a point that we were getting closer to capacity of what the shop was, and we were still going to grow, but it had to be much more reasonable. We were starting to get to the point where, you know, techs had come in, and I'm a high energy person, but I'm not I don't outwardly show it. I do it more through actions of the things around us. But I could tell that we were turning people off because of how quickly and how rapidly we were growing.
You were burning out employees.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a good crew there that was with us through all of that, and they believe in where we're going, but not everyone's ever going to be that invested in it. And I get that and I understand it. So we had to basically come down somewhat to the averages. I mean, we'll never be average. We'll always be above that, but I had to be able to accommodate some of those people in that area so that we could have a team of size to do what we needed to do.
Yep, that's absolutely true. You're not going to be able to staff your store with all A players.
No.
Quickly. I mean, over time, you can get all A players if you can be patient enough, but quickly, you're going to have some Bs and some Cs in that mix. That's just part of it. And that also helps with margins, you know, allows to get things where they need to be. So you grew really, really quick. You got on the other side. Can you tell me about your family? What did you do to them during this whole process? What did they think as they're, you know, riding dad's coattails as you're doing this crazy stuff? And
my wife may have a different outlook, but I think
she's not listening to this. You can say whatever you want.
They don't listen to these guy podcasts.
We talked about this.
Have girls on the podcast. So yes, they probably do. Anyways, moving on.
But our wives won't ever listen.
Our wives won't listen. Yours might.
I mean, there were obviously times in there that stresses were high, but I feel like we managed that pretty well. Because the other side of me stepping out of the dealership world, I was doing 800 hours a week.
Yeah,
we have one daughter. We aren't going to have any other children. So I wasn't going to lose her childhood to work. So even when I was at the house and I was doing, you know, at times 4 a.m. to midnight, I would stop at dinner time and I would come inside for 2 hours to spend time with my daughter. And, you know, that was 18. So she was 7, 8 years old. But we made sure that we did have times where we had that intentional family time.
She prioritized family during the whole thing.
You have to. Because it's, I've seen too many people build businesses. The gentleman we bought the building from, I mean, that's part of what he was going through, but he'd built a business. He'd been with the same lady for 40 years, but he was a workaholic and she was done with it.
Well, I think the message is you can be successful. You can also prioritize family.
Yes, absolutely.
You don't need to burn yourself out on systems and processes that don't work, but also sacrifice your family in the process.
Because at the end of the day, like what we do is great and it makes money and all that, but like we do this for our families. We don't do it for the cash. I mean, the cash creates opportunities and it creates things that we can go do with our family or the communities or whatever the case may be, but that's not why we do it.
You know, it's sometimes we think our spouses don't get it when they see us working so hard because we're building something. But if there's never a point where you cash in, you take a dividend on what's happened, meaning I'm going to take some time off. I'm going to pull some money out for a family thing, you know, whatever. If you never have that moment, you build resentment with your spouse. And then they're just done. They're like, you married me so you could never be here and you could just work all the time. You know, I enjoyed being around you, but now you're never here. And it's a hard spot to be in. What I love about your story is that you said, I'm going to pay that price once. I'm never going to pay it twice. And a lot of owners will pay it, you know, 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, 6, lose count, right? And they've sacrificed everything, everything because they don't learn from mistakes and they are hung up on their self-worth and their ego being the priority. And you said, I had to learn, you know, to not be that. So I'd love to hear about, as you made that adjustment and were able to spend time with the family and see that as most important, and you had that bout of depression, can you tell us some revelations that made you feel depressed and some revelations that kind of helped you kind of get out of that?
I mean, revelations that help you feel depressed, it was, you know, I would do calls with the manager, still in pretty decent contact, but I didn't go into the shop. And it was just seeing that things were going the way that they needed to go and we were still getting positive Google reviews and we were still making money. And it was like, huh, maybe I'm the one screwing it up. And that's probably going through that is where I started looking at the other store. And I honestly think I started looking at the other store because I was more looking for purpose than anything.
Wow.
Our thing for a long time, or my thing for a long time, has been to affect 100 people in a positive manner on a daily basis, those 100 people being employees. So we knew the path that we were on and where we were going. I just don't know that I realized that we were close to that point of looking at store two at that time. You know, I started looking for that store too, and then I quit looking for it just because I couldn't find the right deal or this or that, or things got hard. And the one that we ended up getting, it fell in our lap.
Isn't that funny how it works when it's the right timing?
Well, and you rattled that off pretty quick, the 100 people, 100 people a day.
So our
Where did
goal,
that come from?
You've got to have a number. You've got to have a vision. You've got to have something to strive for. My background being in the dealership world, and I think it happens, unfortunately, in the independent world some as well, but people, employees, they're abused to a certain extent and taken advantage of. And my background in the dealership world, it seems like it happens there much more than it does other places. And I just, if you look at the trickle down effect, if you can affect 100 people in a positive manner on a daily basis, average families like 2.5 people per family. And then 100 people, you're going to touch somewhere, you know, 200 cars a day on that, which you affect the drivers of those cars. And the trickle-down effect you get from affecting those 100 people in a positive manner on a daily basis is huge. So it's much more than just those first 100 people. It's the trickle-down effect is really where it comes into play.
Wow. At what point, as you were in the pole barn growing, did that concept of affecting 100 lives come into play?
It was always affect people in a positive manner. Our our shop was started on the transparency and being nice to people and a safe place to get your car repaired. Converting it to affecting those 100 lives in a positive manner on a daily basis was probably 21 sometime, as we started hiring and really talking to a lot of people that were looking for a new job and hearing some of their stories about what they had been dealing with or putting up with where they currently were. Mm.
You know, coming from a single shop, pole barn, and you mentioned it earlier, you know, people about, oh, it's all about the money, it's all about the money. People who need impact in their lives need people like you to be successful.
Amen.
They need people like you to do what you're doing so you can impact their lives. Because if you don't do it, you're not impacting their lives. When you don't have that purpose, that's what your point is. And that's why growing is important for you to do what you're doing.
It's amazing some of the impact that we've had on employees. I mean, we've got one young man there right now that, like, I honestly don't know where he'd be right now or if he'd still be with us if he didn't work for us.
You're his family now.
We're his family now. Our shop has become his family.
You know, we talk about this a little bit about driving change in the industry. That's what that's about. Driving change. You've seen the bad habits. You've seen the abuse of the employees. You have paid for your own oil change to get the business into the black.
So
you're
crazy.
Passionate about changing the industry. And I think people, they think that might sound trite or you kind of made up, but it's a real thing.
It is very much so.
I love it. I think that your transition and speed, it proves so many things. One, coaching can be so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, consulting is much more expensive for some shops if they don't listen and don't do it for years, right?
Right.
For them, it's very expensive. For you, it's very cheap. If someone puts it to work immediately and it becomes really cheap, then what it also does is it reduces the cycle time of the harvest. I plant the seed, I grow, you know, some type of a plant, I get fruit from that plant, I then use the seed from that to plant more, and it starts this cycle of, oh my gosh, we're growing. It does require you to understand concepts and be able to deal with the stress of how fast this is coming at you, but it also reveals that you are important, your family's important, what you guys are doing is important, is what Jay said. If you don't do it, there's this concept that people say, if I don't do it, somebody else will get to it. I truly believe that God has people in people's lives for a reason. And if you don't do it, it doesn't happen. Otherwise, it's all just a coincidence and none of us matter, right? So if we matter, that means that the responsibility that's been given to me, if it is not done, it won't be done. And that's a heavy burden to carry.
It is.
You are living it out, dude. And props to you and your family and the key employees, like this young man you talked about, that came to work for you and got no money while you were gone, hackers and everything. That's insane.
It is.
That is insane when you think back about it. Like, what you have pulled off in such a short amount of time is absolutely nuts. That's beyond the normal American dream.
It is. And the one thing you've got to be cautious of is people, and I'll use my dad for example, but whenever I first signed up for coaching, we were doing $35,000-$40,000 a month. And I signed up for coaching, and at $35,000-$40,000 a month, it's really expensive for coaching.
Yes, it is.
I had the same conversation with him last week about that same thing. He goes, well, you've more than paid for it to be a member probably forever. So a few years ago, it was too expensive for me to do it. And now he's like, well, it's really paid off and it continues to pay off. And as you develop in the coaching side of it, and you start to get the peers that are within the coaching groups, those peers can be very powerful and very impactful on how you grow your shops.
Yeah. It is nuts how we always think for a split second, I think I finally made it. I got it figured out. And you get there and you go, crap, I don't have anything figured out. And I'm teaching other people and I don't got Jack figured out. And that's all of us. That's part of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. You know, it's not about whether you know the end of the story. It's about whether you just know how to get to where you're at. And if you can turn around and tell somebody else how to get to where you're at, they're all ears. And what's so cool about your story is I love that you immediately, as soon as you started having excess, you said, how can I give back? And I think that's super cool that you're already coaching and talking to other people and it's so fresh in your mind, you're able to reach back and go, I remember that day. Hey, let me tell you how this is going to work out for you.
That was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago, I was like that. But I love your story of sacrifice, selling the family car, you know, buying a lift, buying a scanner, your wife challenging you. And we got to make sure we point out, a lot of people would not be where they are today if it wasn't for a spouse saying, right now, all right, when you turn in your notice. If she had not said that to you, you may not have had the confidence on your own. She planted that seed. And I can't tell you how many troublesome situations my wife's kept me out of. Or when I thought it would be trouble, she's pushed me to run to it.
I would agree.
And the fact that you are here because of that, I would love to someday hear her perspective, but you are here because of thoughts that weren't previously in your mind that others outside of you put into your mind. That's the power of being around other people and having consulting and coaching, even from your own spouse.
Yes.
Because she went boop and put that in there. And that guy who even planted a bad seed in your brain,
mm-hmm.
who literally talked bad about you.
It's fun now because we compete over technicians.
I just think it's the absolutely awesome. And that it proves the power of an idea right there. The power of an idea. You didn't even have it. Someone gave it to you and you ran with it.
Because I tried to get away from automotive program, or not automotive program, the automotive industry for several years. And whenever I finally walked away from and started my own shop, walked away from the dealers and started my own shop, it was basically, you know what? I'm pretty decent at fixing cars and I can talk to people. And that was the thing.
I'm the man.
And I'm going to go all in on this. Because I did. I mean, being in the dealership world's rough. It's a very cutthroat, and I did try and get away from the automotive industry for several years leading up to this.
It's the number one reason why people don't want to do flat rate. They don't understand that you can do it in a fair way. They just mm-hmm. they don't understand that you can actually do it in a way that brings integrity to the situation. They just know what they knew from the dealer, which was playing favorites and politics and nothing like what we promote in ShopFix. We promote sharing profits with the technicians. And so many others don't see it that way. And some who haven't even gone that far, they've done hourly plus commission, whatever, that's fine. But they have had such a bad experience. They're so scarred, you can't get them to see it any other way because of what you're describing.
Mm-hmm. No, I was a flat rate tech and a dealer. It can really jade you in how you perceive it and how you go into it. And, you know, we've got a lot of people with us now that they didn't want to come to work for us on flat rate, but now that they're on flat rate working for us, they don't mind it or they like it.
It helps when you make 20 grand more a year than you did last year.
It does.
Man.
Well, you're projecting 4.5, potentially 5. So where are you going? Like, you've got 2 shops now. What's with your timeline? I think it is funny. You think about time and getting places. 36 months, not a long time ago.
He'll be like 18 stores.
So, yeah. So I'm asking, what's the next 36 month hold for you?
We are, with everything going on right now, we are working on dialing in processes. We know that in order to grow, like, our processes need to be spot on. So that's really what we're focused on right now. Mm-hmm. We've got feelers out for other stuff, but we're not chasing anything.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Sometimes it's time to grow. Sometimes it's time to refine. That's cool.
We're in refinement mode right now.
It's always good to have good foundations because you never know when that next thing's going to pop up. It's usually not on the time frame you might have thought of.
No, it never is.
We were in refinement mode till about 18 months ago. Now we're in growth, and then we'll be back in refinement mode ourselves. Every business goes through it.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome
what,
stuff.
What would you tell somebody who's in a job at the dealer somewhere else and they're thinking about doing what you did? What would you tell them?
Oh, don't know. I'm just kidding.
Scrap all this, which forget it.
It's, you need to know what you're really getting into. It can be very rewarding, but it's not going to come overnight. And you see, and we all see it, there's shops that pop up all the time and they go into it. I'm not saying you necessarily have to have money to start, but you have to have sacrifice. And
if you don't have money, you will be sacrificing.
Correct. But sometimes in that sacrifice, you know, you can sacrifice your brand new truck. You can sacrifice this in order to get the money. There's ways that you can create the cash there. It makes it way harder. Had I not had the building on our property, I don't know whether we'd be here or not. Probably not. we would probably still have a shop. Would we be the size that we are? No, because we sacrificed for, what, 3 years? But I think it's the biggest.
And you're paying yourself like $600 a week now, right?
Yeah, we're up $750.
$750. $750.
So I think it's know what you're getting into. Don't look at the surface of what the shop down the road is doing or your buddy that has the shop is doing, because that's just the surface. There's so much more going on under the surface that you don't know because you don't know. You've never been there.
Yeah.
And as you go into a shop, you will find that there's a lot of you don't knows because you don't know. And the only way to learn those is to get in and do it.
Yeah,
that's right. And I think for myself included, I would tell anybody, even if you can't do coaching right in the beginning, there are very cheap resources to teach you the business side of auto repair.
Yes.
You must chase that stuff. Because I think you would agree, you can spin your wheels knowing how to fix every car problem, but not knowing the business side, totally different ballgame.
I would say in some of those entry level type ones, you need to know that there's a ceiling on those also.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can only grow to whatever your ceiling is. So if you're surrounded against all these entry level type people, you may be the big dog in that group, but you're still really struggling.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. You got to keep upgrading.
So you got to keep leveling up.
Yep.
Well, I think the other thing that you didn't necessarily say, is you went into research mode a little bit because you knew you had to make things work.
Mm-hmm.
And then father-in-law leveraged his shop to do the thing you did. We ran into a challenge. And I think for a lot of people, also, if you're thinking about it, drop into research mode. Look at all the other opportunities. You may not have a barn on your property, but there may be something else. There's other things you're going to have to leverage in your journey. You need to start researching, looking, and learning.
And that's... honestly, that's how I found Shop Hackers. I'd never heard of it before, but I was looking. I knew what my KPIs were for when I was in the dealership. So I went in. I'm like, there's got to be KPIs for the independent auto world. And I was researching one night trying to find KPIs for like ELR verbiage that we used in the dealership.
Effective labor rate,
what they are for the aftermarket industry. And that's when I stumbled across Shop Hackers group.
There you go. There you go. The rest is history.
It is.
Well, I'm glad that you could share all this information, because there are, I know there are people that are in that startup phase that are like, man, if I just had somebody give me, you know, step two, step three, step four. Step one's quitting the job, but where do you go from there? And you just laid it out so succinctly and so cleanly. And the great part was you got the right teaching and advice from the right people. And I would also encourage everybody, when you go seeking that advice, make sure you pay attention to who you're asking that advice from.
And you also have to be willing to receive the advice. There's a lot of guys that get into it They have big egos in their techs, and they're not receiving a really good advice that they do get from really good shop owners. I've seen it many times.
Good stuff.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yes. Enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it, man.
My pleasure.